Good morning you. I hope you're well this Friday. It's the 15th of March, 2024, and it's raining cats and dogs. It's absolutely belting it down. Here in Salford, I've just spent the last 20 minutes drying the puppies. They were soaked into their fur, into their skin. We were out and about this morning. It's a horrible day. I don't believe it's going to improve much either. A lovely evening last night, despite the result. Salford entertained, hosted the Wigan Warriors last night in the Betfred Super League. And with 4 minutes to go, Salford were winning 12-10. With 4 minutes, we dreamed. We were getting excited. But then two late tries from Wigan saw the Warriors run out winners 22-12 in the end. But Salford were brilliant. And they have been brilliant thus far this season. But you didn't come here or download this podcast to hear me, my musings on rugby league, did you? You came for the papers. Before we do go to the front pages of today's UK dailies, the online editions are interesting this morning. It seems there was a big ruckus, a big rumpus on the BBC Question Time programme, which is a decades-long BBC institutional programme. Every Thursday night, Robin Day presented it. David Dimbleby presented it. Fiona Bruce is presenting it now. It's a panel show. Every Thursday night, just after 10:30, a panel show where politicians and well-known people, sometimes celebrities, sometimes authors or sports people, but usually politicians, debate the big issues of the day. Now, they do this through a series of questions put to them by the audience. Among the panellists last night were the columnist Melanie Phillips, who lives part of the year in Israel, and Stephen Flynn, who's the Scottish National Party's leader in Westminster. And it was extraordinary. I was reading about it this morning and I decided I'd have a look at it online. Phillips went into absolute meltdown, making ridiculous claims about how Hamas is stealing aid that is meant for the Palestinians. Too much derision from the audience. The audience gasped and laughed at this woman, who became increasingly frenetic and hysterical, and eventually she started screaming at the audience, effectively telling them to shut up. She lives in Israel. She knows what's really going on there. I had the misfortune of interviewing Phillips about 12 years ago when I was in Spain. It was a short-lived interview. It was fairly hostile. It was about some incursion by the Israeli forces into Gaza or other. She wasn't expecting to be interviewed by me. I was standing in for a presenter who was sick, and of course I gave her a bit of a chasing. Awful, awful, odious human being, Melanie Phillips, apologising for genocide, and the BBC audience didn't like it. Neither did the panel either. So she became increasingly hysterical, yeah. Pierce Brosnan, Bond, is in the news this morning. Bond, James Bond. I think Pierce Brosnan did a pretty good job playing Bond. What do you think? I also thought Timothy Dalton wasn't really given much of a chance. I thought he was a good actor, but Brosnan was fined $500 and ordered to pay a further $1,000 to some charity after he strayed off the permitted trail in Yellowstone National Park. And he ended up wandering around and photographing a thermal area where there's thermal springs and stuff. You're not supposed to. So he was, presumably he was served notice or served a writ or whatever. He went to court and he was fined. He strayed off the beaten path, Pierce Brosnan. A lot of the news programmes this morning talking about this because, of course, he was James Bond. To the front pages. The Eye. Number 10, anxiety grows as angry Tories question Sunak authority. Excuse me. Now, this has come up quite a bit in recent weeks, right? Speculation that Tory MPs, that's Westminster MPs, not Tory members now, not Tory members, the voting public who pay their subscription every year, but the MPs might have had enough of Sunak questioning his authority. And this has led to him last night ending speculation that there will be an early general election on the 2nd of May. So the Eye paper says anxiety is growing amongst Tory MPs who are increasingly questioning his authority. The paper quotes one MP saying there has been a definite vibe shift caused by the handling of the comments made by donor Frank Hester, who is alleged to have said Diane Abbott made him want to hate all black women. The MP speaking to the I, under condition of anonymity, said their colleagues have gone from being resigned, quitting, to being angry. So Sunak said there won't be a May general election. The Guardian. Tories urged to give back further £5 million from Hester. We'll come back to this. The Guardian is loving this story. Of course, the Labour Party supporting Guardian. It alleges that on top of the £10 million we were told Hester has given to the Tories in the last 12 months, he's also given another £5 million. We will come back to that. Okay. There's also a story on the front page of The Guardian about children online. The headline is, "Children cannot avoid violent content online." If there's time, we might come back to that. The Daily Mail. At the very top, just under the banner, there is a photograph of Prince William and Prince Harry. "Diana would knock their heads together," is the headline. There's an article in the Mail by Robert Jobson. But the big splash on the front page of the Mail is "Russia attacks Shaps or AF jet by jamming GPS." What's that about? Well, an RAF jet, which was carrying the Defence Secretary Grant Shapps, suffered a satellite and communications blackout after its systems were jammed by Russian electronic warfare units. This is according to the Mail, which says the incident lasted 30 minutes. It happened Wednesday as the plane was flying over the Baltic Sea. And this, of course, triggered a major security alert. That's the Mail front page. Financial Times. This is an interesting one. Headline is, "Working hours for Commons hit record low under Sunak." Sunak has been accused by the Financial Times of presiding over a zombie parliament. After analysis by the paper showed the average working day for MPs in the House of Commons chamber has been shorter in this parliamentary session than in any other since 1997. It says the average day in the current session, which began in November, has been 7 hours and 9 minutes, while the average between 1997 and 2023 was 7 hours and 58 minutes. One minister is quoted by the Financial Times, anonymously of course, "There's very little going on day to day." Why do I laugh? It should have people standing outside the building with pitchforks and flamethrowers, let's say. Don't say that. They'll come and arrest me. Daily Express, victory. Esther wins Commons debate on right to die. Esther Ranson. Okay, so the Express lead is that MPs will debate the legislation of assisted dying following a campaign by broadcaster Esther Ranson, who has terminal cancer. The paper quotes her. She's urging her supporters to make sure the voice of the people is heard. The Times. 20,000 a month off work with poor mental health. That's the big story in The Times today. And I will come back to this. It's very interesting. So it is. Also on the front page of The Times is this, on the side of the front page. "Let the meat snake. Python meat may be the eco future." And they're quoting some doctor who's connected to the climate change lobby, who says snake might be an alternative because there's millions and millions and millions of snakes in the world. Too many of them. And they might become an alternative to meat in the future. Fuck off, I say. The Daily Telegraph. The Daily Telegraph. Headline is, "Fears for patients in NHS net zero drive." Now, we're definitely coming back to this in a moment or two. It's a story about concerns over electric ambulances and how electric ambulances, which will need to be charged, will mean longer waits for patients because of the time taken to charge them. But it also talks about how the NHS has gone completely bananas about climate change and net zero in other ways, and we'll come back to this in a moment. Also on the front page of the Daily Telegraph, a beaming Sir Alex Ferguson, the former manager of Manchester United. He's pictured standing alongside a couple of his friends, one of whom is the former Bolton and England manager, Sam Allardyce. Poor Sam, he only managed England for one game before he was the victim of a sting by a national newspaper. Remember that. But Fergie looks well, God love him. He had back-to-back winners yesterday at Cheltenham. 15 years he's been waiting for a winner at Cheltenham. Ferguson is a horse racing enthusiast and he owns and part owns horses. Two wins he had yesterday. Good man, Fergie. Well done. The Daily Mirror, cops sued over shot sergeant, is the headline. The Daily Mirror is reporting that the widow of Matt Ratana, who's a police officer who was shot dead after an arrested man was able to smuggle a gun into a South London custody suite. Well, the widow of this police officer who was killed by this guy is suing the Met Police. The paper quotes Sue Bushby saying that if an effective search had been conducted, the gun would have been found and her husband would be alive, her partner. The Metro. Staff work from home caused air misery for millions. What's that about? A report has found that a fault in Britain's air traffic control system last August was prolonged because IT engineers were working from home, according to the Metro, which claims, amazingly, the issue grounded 750,000 passengers at airports across the UK, and it took 90 minutes for an on-call expert to arrive on site and reboot the system. That is bizarre. The Daily Star, headline, Beer Me Up Scotty. Beer Me Up Scotty. What is it about? Well, the Star says that NASA has found booze in space. The paper reports the agency has detected ethanol molecules even, that it says could help Earth-like planets grow in our galaxy. The Star is always good for a laugh, at least the front pages, most days of the week. You're listening to the Papers Podcast with me, Richie Allen. Thank you for listening to it. Thank you for downloading it this Friday, March 15th, 2024. So let's go to that story, the lead story in The Telegraph today. Fears for patients as NHS rolls out net zero electric ambulances. So this is leading to concerns about patient safety because paramedics fear patients will be forced to wait a bit longer because of the hours lost recharging the vehicles, with particular concern about coverage of rural areas given the limited range. This is fucking farcical, isn't it? Isn't it really? I mean, it's laughable to be talking about this, you know. Electric ambulances that won't be on duty for several hours because they're being charged. And if you're in a rural area, don't have a fucking heart attack. Because, you know, once diesel and petrol ambulances are gone. The move next month is part of a series of measures that whistleblowers fear put green credentials above medical priorities. I'm reading now, of course, from the article. The drive had created a bureaucracy that was diverting vast sums from the front line and placing grossly unethical obstacles in the way of clinical decisions, one whistleblower warned. NHS England has set up a greener NHS team with a combined salary bill of £3 million a year, leaked documents reveal. Wait till you hear some of this. This is madness, right? So they're spending £3 million quid a year on a team to figure out how the NHS can be greener. And this means they're pursuing, according to The Telegraph, an environmental agenda, wait for it, which means every medicine and every product has to undergo an evergreen assessment. It is a 135-question process, wait for it. Every product, every medicine, every decision is subject to a 135 question process. Meaning, according to the Telegraph, that no decisions can be taken without a product's social value and contribution to emissions targets being considered. Did you hear that? No decision can be taken without a product's social values. What the fuck does that mean? And contribution to emissions targets being considered. Listen to this, dear listener. Did you hear that? That is a salbutamol inhaler manufactured by the company Ventolin. Five times this year, I'm not exaggerating, and we're only into March, I've had emails and I have phone calls from NHS representatives asking me if I will switch from the brand Ventolin to the brand Salomol. Each time I've told them to take a fucking running jump, because Salomol is useless. It's a useless inhaler. It has very little compression at all. It doesn't have any oomph to it when you compress the canister in the plastic container. It has no oomph, right? It gives a little like this. It's nothing. And you don't feel you're getting the medicine. Ventolin is much better, but they want us to stop using Ventolin to save the planet. I've told them, as long as Ventolin is legal and as long as Ventolin continues to manufacture salbutamol inhalers, you will continue to fucking prescribe me Ventolin. And if you attempt to change it, I will report you to the GMC. I've actually had to go as far as threatening these goons. You know, I've always got, of course, the fallback. I can go private and get a private doctor to prescribe it. But this is the madness. So 135 questions about everything to see what its social values are and its contribution to emissions. And they're paying 3 million quid to a few goons to do this sort of stuff. One supplier has told the Telegraph that devices such as plastic cannulas were routinely being rejected on environmental grounds, despite the fact these would improve patient safety. They're rolling out things like climate-friendly pain relief for mothers in labour and chemotherapy deliveries and GP visits via e-bikes. The whistleblower told the Telegraph, every part of the NHS is under-resourced, waiting lists remain historically high, but commitment to green zealotry remains unchanged. It is absolutely fucking madness, is what it is. And yet there's no stopping it, is there? Because the political class is fully on board with this insanity. Let's go to The Guardian. Big story. The Guardian is loving Frank Hester. Frank Hester. The man who a few years ago was recorded making very unkind comments about Diane Abbott. We know what he said by now. The Guardian says it's not just 10 million quid he gave the Tories in the last 12 months. The Guardian is reporting he's given another 5 million. This guy must be minted. Of course he's minted. The additional money, not denied by the party or by Downing Street, would take Hester's contributions to Tory party coffers in less than a year to 15 million quid, almost as much as the Tories spent in the entire 2019 general election campaign. There is disquiet among some Conservatives about the willingness to accept money from Hester, whose software firm has won lucrative NHS and prison contracts, after The Guardian revealed he told a 2019 meeting that seeing Abbott on TV made you want to hate all black women. So he didn't donate 15 million quid. You wash my hands or you scrub my back and I'll scrub yours. Politics is filthy for so many reasons. And on the Richie Allen Show, because there are much bigger things to discuss, we don't often discuss the basic corruption, because there are bigger fish to fry, as I've said before. But the basic corruption is breathtaking. We saw it during the COVID scam with the PPE contracts awards. We saw this. It's fucking filthy. Here's 10 million quid. Here's a few very lucrative prison contracts and NHS contracts. It is filthy. Hester said she should be shot. Gave 5 million to the Tories in May 2023. 5 million more via his company, the Phoenix partnership. And the news broadcast will be full of this today. It's been the big story of the week. This guy said some hearty words, and therefore they should give the money back, and therefore this guy should never be involved with the Tory party ever again. And he's an extremist, isn't he, in this week when the Tories have redefined extremism, although not in law, not with legislation. So everybody, the Guardian and the Mirror are going big on this today. The Times lead story is interesting to you and me because of what we know. Benefits data reveals extent of claims over mental health. Two-thirds of incapacity benefit claims are for mental health problems, official data has revealed for the first time. Thousands of people a month are being deemed incapable of any work as a result of mental health problems, according to figures that highlight the growing toll of Britain's long-term sickness crisis. Claimants have 2.7 health conditions on average, prompting experts to warn that there is no quick fix for a benefits bill that is surging as a result of increasingly complex illnesses. Record levels of long-term sickness have intensified political alarm about the cost of ill health benefits for people of working age, which is projected to rise by tens of billions of pounds over the next Parliament. Previous figures have shown that mental health and learning disabilities are among the main contributors to disability benefits, which are paid regardless of whether someone can work. But until now, there had been no such data for incapacity benefits paid through universal credit when people struggle to work. So, go back to it. Two-thirds of all incapacity benefit claims are for mental health problems. The benefits bill is surging as a result of increasingly complex illnesses. What might be going on here? I've said to you on the Richie Allen Show, and I've been careful about how I phrased it, because my mental health is pretty robust. I'm a pretty even-tempered, happy-go-lucky guy. But the last 3.5-4 years have shook the shit out of me, to be honest. What has happened? How they did it? The fact they were able to do it? The scam? The lockdowns? The vaccines? All of that. That's had a big impact on me. And it must have had a wider societal impact on people who, you know, had a routine. Get up, go to work, come home, you know, talk to the kids and the wife, or talk to the kids and the husband, put the kids to bed, get up, send them to school, the usual. Holidays, 2-3 times a year. There was a life, there was a lifestyle. And this was turned upside down by the lockdowns and the locking grannies and grandads into care homes and scaring people with apocalyptic tales about viruses rampaging through neighbourhoods and societies, which wasn't really happening. People having to basically commit financial suicide in their businesses. Close your business, don't work. All of this must have had a huge toll on the mental well-being of society at large, or society in general. No doubt about that. Then you factor in a completely untested, untried, brand new mRNA jab technology, which we know is causing chaos, is causing carnage, is causing widespread illness and worse than illness, heart problems, cancers, and ultimately death. And they're saying increasingly complex illnesses. Benefits data reveals extent of claims over mental health, and we're seeing increasingly complex illnesses. They must know why, right? I mean, they can't be in the dark as to the reasons why people are so much more sick now than they ever were previously. And that's the frustrating thing for me. Official figures, according to the Times, published by the Department for Work and Pensions, show that 2 million people are receiving universal credit health benefits. That's up nearly 500,000 in a single year. Listen to that. Up nearly 500,000 in a year. What is going on? Well, they wrecked people's minds with their psychological warfare, their PSYOP, their COVID PSYOP. And then they gave him these medicines. That's what might be going on. That's in the Times today. Let's look at a horrible story in the Mirror about two police officers who will be in court today, charged with assaulting an elderly disabled man in a dementia care home. The man, God love him, later died. He was 93-year-old Donald Burgess, one leg, suffering from dementia. He waved a bread knife from a seated position in a care home room. This frail, tiny, infirm man with one leg with dementia. And you know what they did? They pepper sprayed him. They whacked him with a baton and then they fucking tased him. Stephen Smith and Rachel Camotto, two police officers, are charged with assault occasioning actual bodily harm after their use of force against 93-year-old Donald. Now, they're not being accused of having any part to play in his death. He died weeks later in hospital. The coroner found that their assault on him didn't lead to his death. But what the fuck is going on with the police? How could experienced police officers not be able to restrain a 93-year-old guy missing a leg holding a blunt bread knife? They used an incapacitant spray on him, handcuffed him, hit him with a baton, and then they tased him. Psychotic, isn't it? Where are they finding their police officers when they go out and recruit in communities? What sort of fucking moron would tase a 93-year-old guy with one leg? Only a psychopath. You'd have to hope that young Rachel Camotto wasn't the one tasing him. Oh, it's a fucking horrible story. It really is, you know. You lose all faith in humanity. How could you not use your common sense and speak to him? I know he's suffering from dementia. But how can you not talk down a 93-year-old man with a knife that's used to spread butter? Ah, fuck me. Let's look at the Express. Excuse me. The Express. Just Stop Oil's secret revolution plans will bring chaos to the UK streets. So Just Stop Oil are not very good at having secret meetings, because the Express and the Sun seem to be able to infiltrate these meetings pretty easily. They've infiltrated another one where the Express says some very concerning language has been used. Activists for Just Stop Oil at this meeting claim they want to bring about regime change via a political revolution, and they drew on the godfather of the Russian Revolution, Vladimir Lenin, for inspiration. So according to the Express, this is a revamped strategy by Just Stop Oil. They're going to target the streets and they are going to target the airports of the UK this coming summer. Okay? They want to create a People's House, which is an alternative to the House of Commons. So they're saying they want to subvert democracy. We don't live in democracy. We know this. I couldn't bash Just Stop Oil for these plans now. I couldn't. I'd be a hypocrite. But they want to create a People's House to circumnavigate, to completely bypass the House of Commons. And this is designed to stand up against, quote, the twin genocides of the climate crisis and the war in Gaza. So somebody at this secret meeting described the climate crisis and the war in Gaza as twin genocides. We need to set up a People's House as an alternative to the House of Commons. And we're going for the airports this summer. The Express quotes Indigo Rumbelow, who's obviously a fucking moron, right? Who shot to infamy, according to the Express, after being told to stop shouting during a car crash interview on Sky News last year. Rumbelow said the climate crusaders wanted to disrupt, quote, the symbol of the fossil fuel fast track to hell airports. So this idiot has described airports as the symbol of the fossil fuel fast track to hell. They want to create a political crisis by taking non-violent action together, sitting down at airports, cycling in circles on runways, sit-ins at terminals day after day to prevent passengers getting on their flights. The Express with an exclusive. Another meeting infiltration. Just Stop Oil. Telegraph, finally, for today and for this week. Radicalisation on the rise as teenage terror arrests hit record levels. What the hell is going on here? According to the Telegraph, a record number of children have been arrested for terrorism, official figures show, as a government advisor warned of an increasing threat from online radicalisation. Here we go, right? It's about censorship, this. Home Office figures released yesterday showed that 42 children aged under 17 were arrested last year, nearly one in five of the total number of people held for terror-related offences. It was the highest number since records began in 2002, up by a third on 2022's figure of 32 and double the number 3 years ago. The Telegraph quotes Jonathan Hall, KC, who is the independent reviewer of terrorism legislation. He said the increase could be linked to isolated teenagers being radicalised in malign online spaces. Although there had been evidence of both far-right and Islamist radicalisation, Hall said the ideology was often a model of prejudices and hatred. He said the ideological component here is projected online in gore, black humour, memes, kill counts, live stream, plus official publications of groups like Al-Qaeda and Islamic State. He warned the risk of children being radicalised by extremism on social media was a blind spot in new rules being drawn up under the Online Safety Act to tackle toxic content online. So he's saying the Online Safety Act doesn't go far enough, and there is a blind spot where kids can be radicalised by terror groups and whatnot. Okie doke. Thank you for listening to the papers. Thank you for listening to the Richie Allen Show this week. I appreciate it. There will be a special Sunday Morning Melodies this coming Sunday, 2 days from now. I will be playing Irish folk and traditional music and bringing you some stories of the Emerald Isle, because it's St. Paddy's Day, March 17th, St. Paddy's Day. I think I will imbibe. I will indulge in a pint of the black stuff during the programme as well. Sure, why not? Sure, it would be rude not to. In the meantime, can I wish you a very, very happy weekend? Have a great weekend. Have a great weekend. Look after yourselves and one another. And I'll talk to you really soon. The Richie Allen Show returns on Monday at 4 o'clock. The papers will be online this coming Monday early at 7 a.m. as usual. And I've already mentioned Sunday Morning Melody. So from the BBG, Sloan Tommel. Bye now.